So we will begin by singing some prayers to invoke auspiciousness to our gurus, Six Goswamis, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, and Radha and Krishna and their associates. And then we will discuss this very charming and instructive pastime of Krishna from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Generally, our acharyas recommend that one studies the Bhagavad Gita and then progresses to Srimad Bhagavatam and begins the study of Srimad Bhagavatam from the first canto, which is compared to the lotus feet of the Lord. One begins one's meditation on the Lord from the lotus feet and then gradually moves up the form of the Lord to the smiling face. But Tukaram Prabhu told me that you are already a very advanced group. I'm sure he must be right, and therefore we can go straight to the 10th canto. So I'm taking that risk, but it's not a risk. I'm sure you will all be fit recipients for this message.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Pada Kamala Vaishnavanscha
Last night, we had a satsang program at the home of Sri Vallabh Das and Ananda Vrindavan Dasi, and at the program, but after the talk, one young man, I believe his name is Dhruva. How old is he? Nimaichari? How old is your son? 12? What's his name? Kush, right. Kush. So Kush, is Kush here? Okay, all right. So Kush asked the question. I guess he had read some of the book, Watering the Seed, that Tukaram mentioned. And the book tells a story about when I first met Srila Prabhupada. I was a university student at Brandeis near Boston, and when my father came to know that I had joined the temple there, he tried to lure me away from the temple and Srila Prabhupada by offering me $1 million. And in 1969, $1 million was worth a lot more than it's worth now. And I refused. That was in 1969. Then in 1970, Srila Prabhupada wanted to return to India to begin the activities of Krishna consciousness there. Begin means, of course, Krishna consciousness is there. But Srila Prabhupada perceived that the people in India were very eager to imitate the people in the West. And so they were giving up their original Vedic culture to imitate the Americans. So Srila Prabhupada thought that if he goes to America and the Americans take to Krishna consciousness, then he can bring some of his American disciples with him back to India. And then the Indians, who are so eager to imitate the Americans, they can imitate the Americans who have become Krishna conscious. And actually, the strategy worked. It definitely had effect. So, after I had been in India for some time, not too long, but maybe a year or two, my parents came to visit me in Calcutta then. And they tried the same approach of offering me $1 million, but with a slightly different twist in that they appealed to Srila Prabhupada to support their proposal. As Tukaram Prabhu mentioned, my father was a lawyer who eventually became a judge. And later, when I visited my parents' home after being in India for several years, I found that my father had a copy of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srila Prabhupada's translation. And he had underlined portions and made notes in the margins, specifically on the point that one can practice Krishna consciousness at home. One need not leave home in order to serve Krishna. So this is some of the background to his visit to India that I did not know at the time. So Srila Prabhupada, as usual, as you have probably seen in his quarters in Los Angeles, or seen in photos or videos, that he would have a low table and he would sit on an asan, a cushion behind it, very simple. And so he was sitting in his room in Calcutta. That room is still there in the Calcutta temple. And when my parents came in, he spoke to them in a very engaging way. And eventually they came to the point that they wanted me back. And so my father said that he wanted to establish a trust for me and put $1 million in it. And he wanted me to come back to Chicago to sign the documents. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, you can send the documents, he will sign. So so the my mother could see that things were not going in the direction that they had hoped. And she raised her concern. Of course, a mother is always concerned about her children and their health. So her concern was that I was not getting enough protein in my diet. This was a very common misconception that people had back then, that unless you ate meat, you wouldn't get enough protein. So Srila Prabhupada had a bowl on his table that was filled with sandesh. And Prabhupada's sister, Pishima, was there too. So Prabhupada had Pishima distribute the sandesh. Of course, it was meant to purify them and make them feel more relaxed and blissful. And at the same time, he mentioned that this is made of cheese, and it is very high in protein. And then he turned to me and said, "You must eat 2 dozen rasgulla and sandesh every day." It is an instruction I have been working on ever since. I haven't quite come to the standard, but I am working on it. So, yeah, so Pishima was giving them the sandesh, and Prabhupada was saying, eat, eat, take, take. And, but he could see they were still not really pacified. So, then he said that, this was in October, by the way. So he said, "Let your son stay with me, and I will take personal care. And then when I come to America in April, I will bring him with me." So actually before that, when they were appealing to me to go, appealing to Prabhupada to let me go, Prabhupada said, "Well, he's free to go if he wants." And I said, "No, I want to stay with Prabhupada." So then Prabhupada said, "Well, let him stay with me until April, and then when I come to America, I'll bring him." And then I said, just see how intelligent Srila Prabhupada is, because from October to March, in a place like Chicago, it's very cold, whereas India is very pleasant. Whereas, you know, from April to September, India is very hot. And so when it's too hot in India, Prabhupada is in the West. And when it's too cold in the West, Prabhupada is in India. So I said, you know, just see how intelligent Srila Prabhupada is. And Srila Prabhupada replied, "Well, actually, your son is very intelligent because he has understood my motives." To always keep in the good weather. And my father was actually warming up. He was actually warming up, and he was becoming quite enlivened by Srila Prabhupada's association. And he said to Prabhupada, "No, actually, you are very intelligent." And Srila Prabhupada replied, "Well, I guess I must be. Otherwise, how could I attract so many intelligent young men and women like your son?" So it's sort of went on like that, and they were quite satisfied by the end of the meeting. And on the way out, my father said, and in terms of my father's value systems, from what I understood from the way he trained me when I was growing up, what he said about Srila Prabhupada reflect the two highest, probably the two highest values in his system. He said, I can say two things about your master. One, he's a brilliant organizer. And two, he really knows how to deal with people. So, just to show you how much care Srila Prabhupada took, from Calcutta, we had a Pandal program, then went to Delhi, there was a Pandal program there, and then went to Madras. And in Madras, we didn't have a center. I was the first devotee from ISKCON to go. And so I was living with different Indian families who were excellent cooks. And they were all excellent, but it might have been... And we stayed with a Punjabi, Marwari, and some South Indians. Maybe it was at the South Indians' homes, the idlis and dosas. And so I started to gain weight. When my parents saw me, I was quite thin. And I arranged a program for Srila Prabhupada. He came to Madras and spoke. And when he saw me, he said, you should take a picture of yourself now and send it to your mother. So she'll know I'm healthy. So, Kush read this story in the book. And so he wanted to know why I would leave, you know, such a wealthy family with so many comforts and luxuries to lead a very austere life. In the early days in India, I mean, yeah, there were occasions when we would stay with nice Indian families, but when we were pioneering our own projects, we were living in very austere conditions. We were not eating well. We were subject to all sorts of diseases, malaria, jaundice. And on top of it, there in Juhu in particular, there were a lot of envious people, greedy people who were trying to grabbed the land that Srila Prabhupada had entered an agreement to buy. That's a whole other story, but it was very austere. So Kush asked, why did you do that? Now that is a very good question, in a way. Why would someone do that? Well, as a rule, no one will give up something for nothing. No one will give up something greater for something lesser. If I tell you, I have $10, which I'm willing to give you, if you give me $100, you most likely won't go for that. But if I tell you, if you give me $10, I'll give you $100, you'll think, yes, I can do that. So that's the general principle of life. And that is the principle involved in Krishna consciousness. Why someone would give up something. It's only to get something better. In India, there are people who live on the footpaths or in sort of poor hutments. And all they have to eat might be, at least back then, a dry chapati. Dry chapati means like flat bread, just wheat rolled out and cooked without, and dry means without ghee, without butter. And that's all he might have to eat. And if you try to take it away, he'll fight. He'll fight. You can't take away my chapati. But if you offer the same person a beautiful thali, a beautiful round plate with rice and dal and different varieties of vegetables and savories and sweets, and you say, if you give me your chapati, I will give you this beautiful plate of prasad, then yes, he'll do it. There's a story in our literature that illustrates the same point. There was once a devotee of Lord Shiva who wanted the most valuable thing. And, you know, by his worship, Lord Shiva appeared to him and said that if you really want the most valuable thing, I think maybe he wanted a touchstone, like whatever you touch, it turns to gold. There's a saintly person, a devotee in Vrindavan, named Sanatan Goswami. If you go to him, he can give it to you. So the man went to Vrindavan and asked Sanatan Goswami that, you know, I'm looking for the most valuable thing, a touchstone, and I heard you have it. And Sanatan Goswami said, yes, I do. It's out in the back with the trash. So he went out and he found it, and he was touching what he wanted. It became gold and he was very happy. But then he thought, well, if he's keeping this in the trash, he must not consider it to be very important or valuable. So maybe I should go back and inquire further. So Sanatana Goswami said, well, if you want something more valuable, yes, I can give you something more valuable. But first you have to throw that one in the river. So he was a little hesitant. But he calculated, well, okay. And he threw it in the river, and then he came back to Sanatana Goswami and he said, well, now what's the most valuable thing? And raise your hands. Who can say, especially if you have not heard this story before, who can guess what is the most valuable thing? Yes? Yes, exactly. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So he gave him the holy name, and the holy name is Krishna. Krishna is the most... I don't like to say it, but it's the most precious commodity, Krishna, Krishna consciousness. But it takes some experience of Krishna consciousness to actually have that conviction. My godbrother Gurudas, he was in that first group of devotees who went to India. We went together. Sometimes people would say, why did you give up everything to come to India for Krishna? And he would reply, well, you obviously haven't experienced what Krishna consciousness is. Otherwise, you wouldn't be asking that question. So it is something extraordinary. And people who have experienced it will not trade it for anything else. But rather, they will give up anything necessary to get more of it. So, now I will tell you another little story from my early association with Srila Prabhupada in Boston. And that is that I always wanted to do good for people. And when I was in high school, New Cheer High School, I became the president of like the Future Doctors Association, because I thought that was the best way to help people. But then, when I got to the university, I found that there were students who were quite healthy physically, but who were suffering a lot mentally. And it seemed to me that their mental agony was worse than most physical maladies. So then I became a psychology major, and I thought that was the way to help people. But then I saw that the psychology professors themselves were pretty much suffering the same way that other people suffered. And one case in point is a very nice person. I mean, don't get me wrong. But the chairman of the department he's actually a very thoughtful person, Abraham Maslow, and he pioneered some psychological studies that even today people learn about. But he told a story in a class that one day he was trembling, he had cold sweat, he had different symptoms, and he wasn't sure what it was. So he phoned one of his colleagues and asked him, and his colleague replied, "You are having an anxiety attack." And Professor Maslow, I mean, he's actually quite a very nice person, he said to us that he had written chapters on anxiety attacks in books. But when he was having one, he couldn't recognize it. And so I began to detect a difference between theoretical knowledge and realized knowledge. And, you know, then I understood in the department that there was the usual politics over appointments and budget, and so I thought, I have to look further. And then eventually, I met Srila Prabhupada. But I still had that desire to help others. So during that first week, when Srila Prabhupada came to Boston and I met him, I asked the question that from you I have understood the value or importance of serving God. But what about serving man? And Srila Prabhupada what Srila Prabhupada answered continued from the end of his talk. And at the end of his talk, he quoted a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, very important verse for anyone who wants to be happy. Does anyone in this room want to be happy? If you want to be happy, raise your hand. That's what I thought. So this verse is very important because it tells you how you can be happy. Savai pungsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir ahituki ahituki inatmasu prasidati. That if you engage in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without ahaituki apratiyata. Ahaituki means without any material motive, and apratiyata means without any gap. Yena asu prasidati. That alone can fully satisfy the self. So people may come to the association of devotees, to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and take up the practices to some extent, but not feel that happy or that satisfied as they would have liked. But the key is to yenama supersedit is ahaituki apratihata. You should not serve Krishna with some material motive to get something in return. And you should not there should not be any interruption to your service. In other words, it's not like you say your day's activities or your week's activities, and you have these boxes with different activities and priorities. And then there's like a big box for earning money. And then there's another box, pretty big box, for, well, depending on your role in the family, that could also be a big one, for spending the money. And, you know, then there's a box for spending time with the family. And then there's a box for chanting Hare Krishna, for spending time with the devotees. And for some people, that's like a smaller box, sort of, you know, that's my 3 hours Sunday afternoon. That's good. But as long as you keep Krishna consciousness in a compartment in your life, it's not going to bring you that satisfaction. Of course, if you begin the process, the Krishna conscious part can grow even without your making a conscious deliberate effort. It can grow. But unless it grows, it won't give you the full satisfaction that you want. So I came with this question to Srila Prabhupada that what is the relationship between service to God and service to man? And Srila Prabhupada replied that everyone wants to be happy, everyone wants satisfaction, but they don't know how to find it, how to get it. So if you give someone something that will completely satisfy him, that once he gets that, he doesn't want anything else, is that not service? Is that not a good service? And then he told the story of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was a boy of about 5 years. There was a boy named Dhruva at the program last night. And so, you know, his father had two wives, and the father was more inclined to the one wife, maybe younger, more beautiful. And so once when Dhruva was playing on his father's lap, he was the king, he was playing on the throne. So his stepmother said, you know, you cannot sit on the throne. You're not born from my womb. And his father was so attached to that co-wife that he pushed Dhruva off of the throne, and Dhruva was very aggrieved. And so he went to his mother, and he, at that stage, he wanted that throne. I mean, he was born in a kshatriya. Different people have different natures. That's another just psychological truth. And kshatriyas, they Ishwarabhava, they have that ruling capacity, a ruling tendency. Brahmins are more peaceful and philosophical. So his mother, Dhruva's mother, said, I really can't do anything to help you. So he said, well, then who can help me? He's very determined. He said, I think the only one who can help you is God. Well, where can I find God? Well, I don't know, but many sages and saintly persons go to the forest to find God. Maybe you'll find him in the forest. So Dhruva, 5-year-old boy, left home, went to the forest, and he was looking everywhere for God, in his own way, looking in the bushes, looking behind the trees, looking under the stones. And God, Krishna, who's in the heart of everyone, could understand that this boy is very sincere to find me. So what did Krishna do? Raise your hand. Radha Krishna Das. Yes. By the grace of Krishna, one gets a spiritual master, and by the grace of the spiritual master, one gets Krishna. So Krishna in his heart knew that he was sincere to find him, and so he sent Narada Muni. From within the heart of Narada Muni, he sent him to Dhruva. And so Narada Muni advised him that you are only 5 years old. You shouldn't be taking these things so seriously. You should go home and play like other boys of your age. And Dhruva said, thank you for the good advice, but I'm not able to accept it. If you can tell me how to find God, I will be very happy. But if you're going to tell me to go home, then you can go home. So then Narada thought, okay, he's serious. Like, he passed the test. He's serious. And then he instructed him to chant mantra and perform other austerities in support of the chanting. And in the end, Dhruva performed such sincere austerities and chanted his mantra with such faith that the Lord came, Vishnu came. And Dhruva, you know, offered beautiful prayers and glorified the Lord, and then the Lord asked him if he wanted any benediction. And Dhruva replied, Swamin kritarthosmi varam nayache, that kingdom, I was looking for that kingdom, but now I have found you. And I see that kingdom was just like a piece of broken glass in comparison. And you are like the most valuable jewel. So I'm a thousand times satisfied, million times satisfied. Swamin kritarthosmi varam niya. So I'm completely satisfied, and I have, I do not wish any boon from you. So Srila Prabhupada said that if you can give someone something that will make him so satisfied that he doesn't want anything else, is that not service? It is the best service. And so there are so many devotees who have been given that gift through Srila Prabhupada and the disciplic succession, and they're satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Satisfied in Krishna consciousness means they want to serve Krishna more and more. Not satisfied like, well, I've done enough. I'm satisfied. Yeah, I chanted 4 rounds in the morning, and I gave $100 for the festival, and I came for the Sunday. I'm satisfied. Now that is not what it means to be satisfied in Krishna consciousness. What it means is that I'm satisfied only with devotional activities. But I'm not satisfied that I've done enough. I always feel I haven't done enough. I should do more. I should do better. I'm chanting, I should chant more. I should chant better. I'm serving, I should serve more. So that's what it means. And so to serve more may mean giving up something less. But you willingly give it up to get something greater. It's as simple as that. Now, Tukaram Prabhu, and we discussed a story from the 10th canto, and we won't really have time to read it, but we've discussed the basic idea. But I'll give a little reference to the story, and then on your own, you can read it in Krishna book or the 10th canto. But it relates to Krishna's class friend from when he was in school, Gurukul. And his class friend was named Sudama. Sudama was from a Brahmin family, so he's called Sudama Vipra or Sudama Brahmin. And Sudama was not interested in material opulence. And he married a wife who was also very, supportive of him. I mean, that's how it was meant to be, is meant to be. And, but they were so poor that Sudama was becoming very thin, like emaciated, just like so thin. And it pained his wife to see him so thin. And so finally she suggested that your old class friend Krishna from the Gurukul, he is living in Dwarka as the king, and beyond that, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So why don't you visit him? He'll definitely give you something. Now, Sudama didn't really like the idea of asking for anything from the Lord. He was on that platform, Ahai Tritiya Pratihata. But because his wife really wanted him to do it, and because he liked the idea of going to visit Krishna, he agreed. And the etiquette is that when you visit a saintly person or what to speak of the Lord, you bring an offering. But Sudama and his wife were so poor they didn't have anything to offer. Nothing. So she borrowed some broken rice from one of the neighbors and bound it in a cloth, which Sudama tucked under his cloth and went to Dwarka. And he wasn't even sure if they would let him in. But when Krishna heard that Sudama has come, he welcomed him. He personally went and received him and took him by the hand, brought him in the house, seated him on his bedstead, and washed his feet. And Princess Rukmini was personally fanning him. And Sudama was so ashamed of that gift he brought. He thought, how can I offer that to the Lord? So he didn't say anything. So Krishna said, Sudama, You've come all the way to see me. You haven't brought anything for me. And he was just ashamed. He looked down. And then Krishna, he saw that bulging cloth. He said, what about that? And then he snatched it. And he took a morsel of it. And he was about to take more when Queen Rukmini intervened and stopped him and said, no. By having that one little morsel, you have become so indebted to Sudama that the opulence that he will get just from your having that one little morsel will be more than enough. Now there are some people who say that, and of course Rukmini is the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, original Lakshmi, Mahalakshmi, that she felt that any wealth that she could give him would be exhausted by that, and if she had to give any more, she wouldn't be able to. But another one of our acharyas has said that what it was is that she didn't want Krishna to eat. It's so complicated. These spiritual dealings are so subtle and sweet. One was that she thought that broken rice would be too hard for Krishna to digest. So she didn't want him to eat too much. Another explanation, and they're not incompatible, another explanation was that now that broken rice was Mahaprasad, because Krishna had taken some, and it was offered to Krishna by his most loving school friend, most intimate school friend. So Rukmini Devi was thinking, oh, I want to have a little of this prasad and I want to share it with all of my friends. So she didn't want Krishna to eat too much. So they spent their time discussing their childhood in service to the Guru, and very nice instructions about service to the Guru. Krishna said that we have both realized that that by service to the Guru one meets with all success in life, and like that, yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. And then Sudama left the palace and began walking home. And on the way, he was just absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, his dear friend Krishna. And it was not in his mind to ask Krishna for anything. And then he started to think, oh, when I get home, my wife is going to ask what happened if I asked Krishna. What will I say to her? And then as he approached the place where his house used to be, he was taken aback because his house was gone. And instead of his house was a beautiful palace. And his wife came out to greet him, very nicely dressed and ornamented. And without Sudama's having asked Krishna for anything and having offered him just a morsel of broken rice, Krishna benedicted him with such opulence that we can't imagine. But Sudama was afraid, and this is a very important point, very instructive. He was afraid. That with all this opulence, he might forget Krishna. Sometimes it's said that when a person is in distress, he prays to God. But then when he's in an opulent condition, he forgets God. And so Sudama was afraid that, okay, when I was living in poverty, yeah, I was thinking of Krishna. Now with all this opulence, I might become proud and forget Krishna, which he didn't want. But Krishna, knowing Sudama's heart, gave him the benediction that he would, even in the midst of all the opulence, he would not be disturbed and he would not forget Krishna. So, any one of us can forget Krishna at any time. In fact, it doesn't take that much for us to forget Krishna. But Sudama, he remained the same. This is the point. He remained the same when he was in a poor condition and when he was in an opulent condition. But because Krishna knew that he would not forget him in an opulent condition, he was not afraid of giving him the opulence. And that is something Krishna does. He'll give us some opulence to use in his service. But if he sees that we're getting carried away by the opulence and forgetting our real priorities, he may take it away. And that is also his mercy, because he cares for us more than we can care for ourselves, because he knows who we really are and what is really in our best interest. So someone might take this story superficially, and like that verse, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yome Bhakta Prayachati, that Krishna says, anyone who offers me a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or some water, I will accept it. So Sudama offered Krishna just broken rice, a morsel of broken rice, and Krishna accepted it. And he gave Sudama the greatest blessing of Krishna consciousness, and with it, all opulence. But if we, you know, someone might read this and think, well, that's a good deal. I'll offer Krishna a leaf. I don't even have to, I'll just offer some water. But Yome Bhaktya Prayachati, with love and devotion, with love and devotion, not thinking, oh, I heard in the class, you know, if I could just offer Krishna a piece of broken rice and I'll get a huge mansion and servants and... No. Bhaktya, with devotion, with love and devotion. So everything is there, but it is available to us
when we are sincere. That's the main thing, is to be sincere. And if we are, we will experience the greatest treasure of Krishna consciousness. And it may also happen that we get material opulence if we can handle it in such a way that it does not distract us from Krishna consciousness, but rather it becomes a facility to be used in Krishna's service. One morning in Juhu, a devotee told a story. I think it was actually Brahmananda Prabhu. He told the story of another devotee who, the same sort of scenario. He had joined the movement, and his father tried to get him to leave by offering him some money, but he didn't leave. But then later, after his father died, the son inherited quite a good amount of money and left the movement. And Brahmananda Prabhu commented, like what his father couldn't achieve during his lifetime, he achieved in his death. So when I heard that story, I thought, wow, I hope that doesn't happen to me. but actually, well, I don't feel comfortable talking about myself, but since I already began, I guess I have to bring it around to its proper conclusion. But in the end, something like that, I got $1 million, and stayed in Prabhupada's service. So, not that I'm taking it for granted, but let us say, and there may be a bit of speculation here, but let us say that Krishna thought there was enough chance that I wouldn't forget him more in that situation. And so, anyway, that wasn't a very good example. But Sudama Vipra, that's a good example. That's a good example. So, yeah, and, you know, sometimes, yeah, opulence is light. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. It comes and goes. Chanchala. Lakshmi is known as Chanchala. But, although she has that Chanchala nature flickering, going here and there, sometimes she's there and she leaves there, sometimes there then leaves there. When it comes to Narayan, Krishna, her eternal husband, she's not Chanchala. She's always at the lotus feet of Narayan. So if we are also engaged in the service of Narayan, Lakshmi will automatically be there. Then there's no Chanchala. But otherwise, fiat. It's like that. She's with you for a while, then she goes. She's with someone else for a while, then she goes. And, yes, and Srila Prabhupada said that, everyone is after Lakshmi, but Lakshmi is after Narayan. So if you have Narayan, you automatically have Lakshmi. But he also said that that is true everywhere except Vrindavan. Everywhere else, Lakshmi is chasing after Narayan. But in Vrindavan, Krishna is chasing after Radharani. So, Radhe Radhe. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.